As we heard elsewhere on the show this morning, immigration promises to be a top issue this year in Washington, D.C., as Congress and the Trump administration deal with issues ranging from a permanent deal for DACA recipients to funding for a border wall to the president's talk of ending chain migration. How much do U.S. immigration policies, though, look like those of other countries? To get a sense, I'm joined by Dimitri Papadimitriou, founder of the Migration Policy Institute. And Dimitri, in general, how similar or dissimilar is U.S. immigration policy relative to other large developed countries?
Well, quite dissimilar, but most dissimilar with the other English-speaking countries. So, you know, when you're comparing the United States, let's say, with Canada or Australia or New Zealand or the UK, we're very, very different. But in the last decade or so, a lot of the Europeans have adapted variations of our system in terms of what we call economic immigration. In other words, bringing in immigrants, newcomers, in order to either fill a particular job or to increase the human capital of a country.
Would that be, for example, the kinds of visas that high-tech companies use to bring in skilled workers to fill those kinds of jobs?
Exactly right. In this particular system, it is the employer that is at the center of the selection process, because it is the employer that has the job, that if he or she fails in the selection, he or she will have to pay a penalty in having to constantly train and retrain the individual, etc. In places like the English-speaking countries, the emphasis is on identifying individuals who have the human capital characteristics. By that, I mean language, age very frequently, although it's not at the very center of it, work experience, and of course, education.
If other English-speaking countries are starting to move in the direction that the U.S. has, is that to you an indication that what this country is doing works?
Well, it is an indication that has come from experience that they have had with their selection systems. In the past 10 years, there's an awful lot of research that has been done that indicates that people who come, who are selected primarily on their human capital characteristics, take a much longer time to become fully integrated into the workforce than other people who are selected by employers, who get employed the very first day that they touch down in the destination country. So the way that they have dealt with this is by giving a strong preference for an employment offer, a job offer, and in the case of Canada and now Australia, by allowing provinces or states to actually select their own immigrants on the basis of their own needs, and then the federal government, the central government, comes afterwards and ratifies the decision. We have created, in a sense, a hybrid system that takes the best features from the one and the best features from the other, and we've come to something that works for most people most of the time.
How do other developed countries, English-speaking or otherwise, handle family migration, where, you know, one member of a family gets established and gets a legal status and then is able to bring in other members of the family, something that the president and his administration has talked about maybe doing away with or changing in some capacity?
Right. We are a complete outlier in that regard in two ways. The first way is that we have by far the broadest definition of what a family is. But we're also an outlier in a different way. If you are an immigrant and what we would call a green card holder here, there are different names around the world for this. In most countries, you can bring your spouse and your minor children, and in most instances, you will be treated like a citizen. We put obstacles, numerical and other, in the ability of immigrants to be reunified. So we're a little stingy when it comes to this, and we're far too generous when it comes to how we define family.
How much do countries look at other countries when they're trying to craft immigration policy? I mean, it would seem as though each country has its own sort of unique characteristics and needs and requirements. Is this the kind of thing where countries look for best practices from other places, or is each one so unique that they kind of have to almost reinvent the wheel each time?
This is the smartest question that I've ever been asked on this topic. So,
wow.
Yes, because people are not interested in what other countries are doing, but most importantly, you're getting to the crux of the matter, which is what role does history, experience, and the way that you see certain things play in decisions about whom to admit to your country? So we don't learn much from each other, although we have all sorts of groupings of states that meet just about all the time. We have had a family-focused immigration system that goes back, you know, to the 1920s. Unfortunately, we haven't been able to really touch the system since 1965. So the way that we do our business is that we try to bypass the system and come up with interesting, sometimes very imaginative ideas of bringing people in through a temporary immigration system, and then allowing some of them, under certain conditions, to apply for a permanent residence. Other places do not have this concept of numerical limits. So if you come on these bridging visas, after you meet the requirements for permanent residence, you simply transition out of a temporary job to a permanent job. So here is where the uniqueness of each country plays large.
Dimitri Papadimitriou is the founder of the Migration Policy Institute.